Lecture 22, Ancient Egypt, Middle and New Kingdoms.
Last time, we left ancient Egypt in a state of potential collapse. The kingdom had fractured into its constituent provinces. Different provincial leaders were competing one with the other. And the centralized authority of the pharaoh had evaporated. It was a time of famine and hunger and political disorder. But now we're going to pick up the story and explore the later history of ancient Egypt through the classic centuries of the Middle and New Kingdom to its final evaporation in Roman times in 30 BC. First, we're going to describe the reunification of Egypt by the pharaoh Mentuhotep, and the changed role of the pharaoh during the Middle Kingdom. Then I'm going to briefly analyze the significance of the Hyksos rule of Lower Egypt at the end of the Middle Kingdom. And then the third part of the lecture will summarize the events of the New Kingdom, the period when Egypt became a great military and imperial power. I'm going to describe the controversies over the heretic pharaoh Akhenaten, and the restoration of Egypt's power by the great 19th dynasty Ramessid kings, and also analyze the Egyptian foreign policy of the day. And then finally, I'll discuss the end of the New Kingdom and the reasons for the decline of pharaonic rule after about 1000 BC. We have a lot of ground to cover. In the previous lecture, we saw how a series of catastrophic droughts contributed to the collapse of Old Kingdom Egypt in about 2180 BC. That is about 1,000 years after unification. The fighting and rivalries between local leaders in Upper Egypt intensified as the droughts weakened and the floods returned to normal, and clearly a bigger political entity was going to form. By 1975 BC, the rulers of the city of Thebes in Upper Egypt had conquered their neighbors. Here again, you got the process of unification beginning in Upper Egypt and spreading southward. And they ruled over a kingdom which extended from the first cataract at Aswan to the Assyut area of the middle reaches of the Egyptian Nile. Now they openly proclaimed themselves as the sons of Re, the sons of the sun god, and the rulers of Upper and Lower Egypt, even, in fact, if they didn't rule over this entire unified kingdom. In that year, a ruler named Mentuhotep II assumed the throne of this kingdom. He was an expert politician and a warrior, and in a series of bloody military campaigns, he subdued both Upper and Lower Egypt and conquered his rivals. And he reunified Egypt at the beginning of what became known to Egyptologists as the Middle Kingdom. The Middle Kingdom pharaohs who followed Mentuhotep were mostly energetic rulers. They were men of great ability. They extended Egypt's trading contacts throughout Southwest Asia, along the critical eastern Mediterranean shore, into Turkey and into Mesopotamia. And they also conquered the desert chiefs of Nubia south of the first cataract. You'll recall that Nubia was of great importance to Egypt because of supplies of tropical products and gold. Every time the pharaohs became weak, the Nubians became more aggressive, and vice versa. There was a sort of concertino effect all the time. Now, these Middle Kingdom pharaohs were somewhat less despotic than their Old Kingdom predecessors. They changed their philosophy much as a result, we think, of the trauma of the breakup of the Old Kingdom. Now they behaved very much more like shepherds of the people, looking after the welfare of the people. They did a great deal to expand agricultural production, because one of the reasons the centralized authority of the pharaohs fell apart at the end of Pepi II's reign and the end of the Old Kingdom was because he couldn't feed starving people. So the Middle Kingdom pharaohs invested enormous energy in irrigation projects of a large standard, some of them near the Fayum depression to the west of the Nile, and they also invested in enormous state-run grain storage facilities.